Have you ever wondered why the world has become so unwell, overweight, depressed, out of shape? And there's no argument about that. As a human race, we're not doing very well. So as an exercise professional, as a parent, a teacher, a coach, as a person who either is healthy, fit and strong or wants to be, and you want the rest of the world to be, especially the people that you love and care about, what are we gonna do about it? And it seems that we're not lacking in information. If you Google anything about health, fitness, exercise, eating, how to lose weight, how to put on muscle size, how to get fit, there's literally millions of pages of information. And then, of course, there's books and seminars and workshops and experts in all of the areas, exercise physiologists, cardiologists, endocrinologists, psychologists, all the experts on how to get the brain and body healthy. And yet, as a human race, we're not doing very well. So is it because we're not reading the information or listening, watching the information? Is it that we don't want to be healthy, fit and strong? And I always ask that question, do you want to be weak? Do you want to be unfit? Do you want to be out of shape? And do you want to keep getting sick? And surely the answer is no. So what do we need to do differently could probably be a great question, because if we keep doing what we're doing now, it doesn't seem to be working. And for somebody like me who's been an exercise professional now for over 40 years with the only sole purpose every day to inspire and excite people to exercise, obviously my message is not getting through, and whatever your message is, it's not working either, because there are so many people who are just either not interested in exercise, or they've tried it and it didn't work for them, or they've tried a diet, or they've tried some kind of pill, powder, potion, nutritional program, and it hasn't worked. And isn't it interesting that most of those, or all of those programs, they all promise that they will work. If you do this, it will work. So there's the first question. If I do it, will it work? And then there'll be people who say, yeah, but I did that and it didn't work. So what do we need to do differently? What information do we need to share, and how do we need to share it to inspire and excite people to want to be fit and healthy? And again, I ask the question, I'm sure that people don't want to be unfit, weak and unhealthy, but why have they chosen to, or why have they decided to not be? And that's one of the biggest questions that I ask every day, and I don't have an answer to that. But I've got some interesting things to consider. And one of them has a lot to do with food, and the other one has a lot to do with exercise. So as an exercise professional, parent, teacher, coach, maybe we can brainstorm, and that's that great suggestion, storm with people who have a brain, and what if we could come up with some solutions? And I'll just pre-frame that with, if we keep doing what we're doing, it's not working. There's a very tiny percentage of people who are really fit, and I'll rephrase that question. How many people do you know who have these, and I always ask these four questions. They've got a stack of energy all day, every day, for the whole day. They perform at their best at everything that they do. They look good in and out of their clothes. So they look good naked and they look good in their clothes because they've got great posture, great hair, great skin, great nails, clear eyes, great teeth, strong bones, all of those things that make us look good and feel good. And they're doing an eating and exercise plan, and they're actually getting the results that they want from it. And I always ask that question, what should we be able to demand from our eating and exercise plan? And if we're going to do something, should we be able to demand that it's going to give us a stack of energy, help us perform at our best, make sure we look good in and out of our clothes and get the results that we want? And results, of course, are different for everybody. So there's people who are wanting a sporting result, an athletic result, a size result, a performance result. They want to be great parents, great teachers, great lovers, great rock climbers, great water skiers, great mountain bike riders. There's a whole heap of things that people want to get out of their exercise program. The results are usually different for everybody. So if we want to demand that from our exercise program, there's two things involved, of course, and there's unfortunately a big argument about, is it more food or is it more exercise, or is it a combination of both? But here's my big questions. Food, one of the most argued topics on the planet. literally. And not just argued in the general public. If you go to the pub or to a barbecue or have people around for dinner, there'll probably be some conversation about food, or there'll be people who say, I can't eat that, or I don't eat that, or I'm a vegan vegetarian, or I'm an anti-carb person, or I need more protein person. And there's a lot of argument about what people will eat and won't eat. And of course, we're allowed to do that, aren't we? Because there's lots of foods that we don't like and there's foods that we do like. And as humans, should we be able to choose? One would suggest, yes, I want to eat the things that I like to eat. So there's a lot of argument about food, and everybody's got an opinion about food. But the question that I always ask is this: if I love something and I'm then told you can't have it, mustn't have it, don't have it, shouldn't have it, it's bad for you, what does that do to the psychology of my brain? And I think it's a really important question to ask, because we often focus on physical health, but what about mental health? If I really love something and I can't have it anymore, there's probably a couple of things that might happen. It might have happened to you. You might have seen it happen to other people where they don't have it anymore, but they're really miserable. So they really want to drink a glass of wine, or they really want to have some chocolate, or they really want to have a piece of pizza, but they don't anymore because they think it's bad for them. And they live their life in a really miserable way. I wish I could have that, but I can't have it. And food starts controlling their life. So they don't eat it, but they really want to have it. So life becomes an argument about food. So these are all the things that I can't have. I wish I could have them, but I can't have them. And there's this horrible conversation in your headspace where food ends up controlling your life. The reverse of that is that I'm not supposed to have it, but I do. So now I feel guilty. I feel fat, I feel ugly, I feel bloated, I feel bad about myself. And there doesn't seem to be, it doesn't seem to take too long to connect up that if I eat food that people tell me is bad for me, I end up feeling like a bad person. And what does that do to my psychology? And there's so much information, literally, and I have people, and I'll go to a really extreme step, I have people scream at me, verbally abuse me for what I eat or what they think everybody else should eat. So people will scream at me and say, Rowie, people shouldn't eat sugar, it's bad for them. Rowie, people shouldn't eat carbs, it's bad for them. I'm sure they understand that carbs and sugar are the same thing, but that's okay. People need more protein. We need to eat more protein. And they scream at me. We shouldn't eat after 4 o'clock in the afternoon. We shouldn't eat every day. We should be intermittent fasting. And there's this, and I love it because it's a passionate scream. It's people who really believe what, I'm sure they believe what they're sharing is true, and they may live their life that way, and they get either aggressive or passionate or angry or loud about what they believe in about food. I always ask this question though: is it possible that whatever information you deliver or another person delivers or an expert delivers, that there will be somebody who disagrees? So living in a world where there are cardiologists, oncologists, all the people that are really working very hard right now to stop coronary heart disease, cardiovascular disease, type 2 diabetes, osteoporosis, depression, so we bring in the psychologists as well, they all argue very loudly about what to eat. And is it possible that if one cardiologist says you should eat only meat and one cardiologist says that you should eat only plant-based foods to the extreme of you should only eat green vegetables, where does that leave the human race? What do we do? And usually we end up believing the person who we like the most, or they look the best, or perhaps have got the most degrees, or maybe we watched a documentary and it made sense to us. There's a lot of documentaries now about how you should eat. Whew, but is it possible that whatever information is delivered, that there's a contradicting version of that? And I don't know now as an exercise professional how we could even deliver information about food, because everything that you deliver, somebody will argue with that particular information. And I'll give you a classic example, particularly as an exercise coach and in the fitness, and I'd like to say in a profession, but it's really an industry. It has become a multi-million dollar business to sell supplements, to sell nutritional supplements. And what's really interesting with that particular example is there are people who spend hundreds, if not thousands of dollars every year maybe even hundreds and thousands of dollars on nutritional supplements. So for performance, for fat loss, and then all the vitamins and minerals. And they have this very large compilation of pills and powders and tubs of stuff that they take and spend a lot of money on. And absolutely passionately believe that that's helping them to perform better. And when I say passionately, there's some of the people that scream at me, you have to take this supplement, you have to take this powder or potion, it's really important. Now, the reverse of that is there are, on a regular basis, the top nutritional universities in the world will do literature reviews on all the studies that have been done on supplements. All sorts of supplements, vitamins, minerals, phytochemicals, protein powders, protein bars, all the things that people supplement their eating plan with. And a literature review simply means that they get all the research studies that have been done in that year or the last 5 years or the last 10 years, and they do an overview of what the scientific research studies have shown. And it's really interesting that every year, without fail, since I've been in the exercise profession and I've been an exercise professional, there's been a large number of experts that suggest that we don't need any form of nutritional supplementation, that we can get everything that we need from food. So there's a big separation. There's people who are absolutely passionate that you need to spend thousands of dollars on nutritional supplementation. And there are other people who absolutely believe that you don't need any nutritional supplementation. So again, what do you do? As an exercise professional, should we be promoting nutritional supplementation because we believe in it? Or should we be telling people not to have it? And of course, we can't tell people not to have something that they're really passionate about. That would be, I imagine, disrespectful. If somebody came to me and I was taking some form of nutrition powder and somebody said to me, you don't need to take that, it's bad for you, you shouldn't take that, you should just eat food, and I loved it and I thought I was getting a result from it, I would find that to be very rude of the person sharing that with me. So where does that leave us as exercise professionals when it comes to food? If we tell people they can't have, don't have, mustn't have, shouldn't have, that's bad for you, but there's an expert that will disagree with us, is it possible that we'll break down the relationship with the person that's in front of us? Because they might go to another expert and get different information. If we tell our clients you need to take these nutritional supplementation products and they don't believe in them, or they find another expert that says you shouldn't take them, where does that leave our relationship? And if we want to have a great relationship with somebody, and I'm using food first because I'm an exercise professional, I specialize in helping people to exercise. And interestingly, there's, and I'll ask the question, is there any food at all on the planet, or any nutritional supplementation or product that can get you fit and can get you strong? And it's a really important question to ask, because the argument is, how do you exercise if you don't have the right fuel in your body? And it's a great question. But ultimately, to get fit, I've got to get puffed, and to get strong, I've got to overload my muscles and bones. So I have to exercise. There's no pill that I can take that will make me fit. Now, if I eat effectively and I have some form of nutritional supplementation, if that's what I believe in, I may then be able to puff harder, lift heavier. But if I don't get puffed and I don't overload my muscles and bones, I can't get fit and I can't get strong. And I also can't strengthen my central nervous system or my endocrine hormonal system. And they're all the things that keep us healthy and happy. So I have to exercise. So as an exercise professional, one of the things that I always ask myself is, what do I need to help people with when it comes to their food, versus what if I get them to exercise effectively? So if somebody's getting puffed and getting fit and they're overloading their muscles and bones, endocrine system, hormonal system, central nervous system, so they're getting strong, muscles and bones are strong, and their brain is strong, is it possible that they will make better decisions about their food? When I then ask the question, if I combine can't have, mustn't have, don't have these foods with you have to do these exercises, is it possible for some people that becomes all too much? And then they link them together so that if they go out and have a takeaway meal, they then skip their exercise. Well, I've blown my food, so I'll blow my exercise as well. Or they skip an exercise session and go, well, I haven't made it to the gym today, so I'll just go to the pub and have a pie and I'll start again next Monday. I'm just using some classic examples of things that have happened to literally hundreds, if not thousands, of my clients over the time that I've been an exercise professional. and it isn't working. I'm seeing now overweight children. I'm seeing children with type 2 diabetes and osteoporosis and cardiovascular disease. They're supposed to be old people's diseases, and now we've got kids with them. So as an exercise professional, and understanding that if I get people fit and I get people strong, they won't get coronary heart disease, type 2 diabetes, osteoporosis, and they're very unlikely to be depressed or anxious. How do I get people to exercise? And if I give them an impossible eating plan, or I tell them that they can't have all the things that they want to eat, is it possible that they may never exercise because they just don't want to start? It's all too hard. And we live in a world where sugar and soft drink and takeaway food and chocolate and lollies and chips and biscuits and food courts and buildings that you can drive through to buy food, and food as an experience, has become literally part of our life. And if I've planted into somebody's head that if they eat that food, it's bad, do I want to make people feel bad just for wanting to eat it? They may never eat it because they trust me and say, oh, well, Rowie said don't eat that, so I won't eat it, but I really want to because I really like it. As an exercise professional, I now ask myself this question. What if I could create an eating and exercise plan that would turn somebody's body into a food-burning, fat-burning, calorie-burning, carbohydrate-burning, protein-burning, for that matter, machine, so that they could really enjoy their food without feeling guilty about it, without getting angry or frustrated or annoyed that they can or can't have a particular food that they love, and they just enjoyed their life. So they enjoyed their food, they enjoyed their exercise. What if I could do that for somebody? There's a lot of people out there telling people what to eat. And I'll say again, how many documentaries are saying you should be a vegetarian or you should be a carnivore? You shouldn't eat sugar, you shouldn't eat carbohydrate, you should eat more protein. And there's this big long list of things that people should and shouldn't do. I spend or invest a lot of time with children. And is it interesting, or have you noticed that when you tell children what they should and shouldn't do and what they can and can't have, there seems to be a bounce back or a fight against? So if I say don't do that, it seems that a child wants to do that straight away. And do we ever grow out of that? What if it's more about can do? This is what you can have, and this is how you can live, and this is how you can feel. This is your healthy, fit, strong body that you can have. If you have an exercise program that's simple and you have an eating plan that you enjoy, do you want to eat for performance? Do you want to eat for pleasure? Do you want to enjoy your food? And I'll give you a beautiful example. One of my exercise professionals, when we were doing our final exercise session, was this great question, which I ask all exercise professionals to ask: what food do you love and what foods don't you love? And we seem to focus on, again, what you can and can't have, but what about the foods that people really enjoy? So I happily shared that my favorite food is Italian gelati, and my three favorite flavors are chocolate, pistachio, and hazelnut, and I love gelati. And I had this really wow experience. I think it was a week later, or might have been 2 weeks later, where this exercise professional called me and said, Rowie, have you had a gelati this week? And it gave me a really beautiful big experience. What if, as an exercise professional, we helped people to enjoy the foods that they love? Because they've got a fit, strong body that can burn food and calories and fat and carbohydrate and protein really fast and put all the nutrients in the right places because their body's fit and strong. What if we encourage people to really enjoy the foods that they love? And is it possible that if we really enjoy the foods that we love and we don't have a I can't have attitude about them, that we may not eat that much of them? And this is a really important question for me to ask, because for my entire career, when I was actually a personal exercise coach, where I was training 64 people every week, and that was the exact number because that was the exact number of time slots I had, most of my clients were people who had a horrible relationship with food. They were either anorexic or bulimic, so they hated food and were trying not to eat it, or they were throwing it up or taking laxatives to poo it out, or over-exercising because they had an exercise bulimia, and they just hated their food. I also had people who hated themselves so much, and they became morbidly obese because they were using food as a way of abusing themselves. And I'm sharing that with you because it was a I wanted to help, of course, but what a horrible way to live, where you hate food so much that you don't want to eat it, or you want to eat as much of it as you can and then throw it up, or you have to exercise it off because you feel so bad about yourself, or your body has become so incredibly sick because you just keep eating and eating and eating. Now, how do we get to that spot? I don't have the cure or the prevention for anorexia, bulimia or obesity, but I will share with you that every single one of those people, food was controlling their life. They didn't have a happy, healthy relationship with food. And they've all shared with me passionately that at some stage in their life, they were told, can't have, mustn't have, don't have, shouldn't have, that's bad for you. And my anorexia clients would share with me that there was a simple step between that food's bad for you to I'm a bad person if I eat it. I'm a good person if I don't eat it. I'm a powerful, strong person if I can control what I eat. I want to be in control of my food. And they're powerful words that come from people where food is controlling their life, but they don't want to eat it. And then people who eat too much food will share, I'm out of control. I have to eat every packet of food. Everything that's put in front of me, I have to eat it. If I open a block of chocolate, I have to eat the whole lot. If I open a packet of biscuits, I have to eat the whole lot. I just don't have any control over what's going on. I have to keep eating. I don't want that for anybody. I want people to love a chocolate biscuit and really enjoy a piece of cake. And if they love pizza, sit down and thoroughly enjoy it. Shouldn't food be a pleasurable part of our lives? And regardless of how long we live, whether it's short or long, wouldn't it be nice to have appreciated beautiful meals in beautiful places with beautiful people? And I never want to take that away from anybody. So what if we stop telling people what they can and can't have? What if we have a really interesting conversation with each one of our clients about what they love to eat and what they don't love to eat? What if the healthy eating plan always includes the foods that they love and never includes the foods that they don't love? I always ask the question, why would I waste calories on food that I don't like? And what do you want to do to make sure that you enjoy your food? It's one of those questions that I ask parents when they say to me, my kids shouldn't be eating chocolate, or they shouldn't be eating sugar, or they shouldn't have soft drink, it's bad for them. And I always ask the question, how do you want your kids to live? Do you want them to have a healthy relationship with their food so they really enjoy their food? And I'm going to give you a very personal story. One of my sisters with four children wanted to bring her children up very healthy, which is a great ideal. And in their house, there was never any sugar. There was never any chocolate, biscuits, takeaway food, soft drink, nothing. And in fact, there was probably a fair bit of can't have that, don't have that, mustn't have that, they're bad for you. And if you want to be healthy, you can't have them. Very sadly, her four children left home very early, and her four children after they left home became obese. Very, very overweight, with very pimply faces, with very unhealthy lifestyles. They had been restricted for 15, 16, 17 years of their life, and there was a major bounce back effect after they could then eat whatever they wanted to. I'm sharing that with you because that was really sad to see. I was very young because it was one of my older sisters, and I just thought, wow, they seemed such healthy kids, and now as adults they've become very unhealthy. That was, of course, one of the reasons why I decided that I wanted to be involved and help people with a great relationship with their food, and how can we stop that from happening. Again, most of my obese clients would share with me that, yes, they could lose weight, but every time they lost weight, they put more weight back on again because they went through a dieting stage, where they couldn't have the foods that they love. So when they could have, when the diet was over, and they could have the foods that they loved, they ate more of it than they ever would. They binged on their food. I share another very interesting story. The one time that I competed in bodybuilding, at the end of the event, which is quite interesting because the event was sponsored by Sara Lee Cakes. So there was chocolate cake, banana cake, carrot cake, and lots of muffins on a big table for all the competitors to eat as much as they wanted to at the end of the event. And they did. And I remember watching one lady, she'd actually won the big girls competition. She had a magnificent physique, a very muscular, low body fat, beautiful woman who'd obviously been very disciplined for a very long time to create this physique. And at the end of the competition, she didn't just eat the cake. It was like she was shoveling it into her mouth, forcing it into her mouth. And then half an hour later, she was in the toilet throwing it up. And I'm sharing that with you because I don't want that for anybody. I'm sure you don't either. If you're a parent, I'm sure you never want your children to overeat and then throw up, or to have such an unnatural relationship with food that they binge eat because they can't have what they want to eat. As an exercise professional, I would love for everybody to have a healthy relationship with food. So I'll ask the question again. What if we ask people, what do you love to eat? What don't you love to eat? We'll always include what you do. We'll never include what you don't. What are the reasons that you're eating at the moment? And we all have them. Where are the places that you love to eat? I would hate to take away from people the experience of going to a restaurant or sitting down with their family to eat food, or just the thoroughly beautiful experience that food might be bringing to their life. There's a lot of people now who say, don't eat breakfast, you should be intermittent fasting until lunchtime. But for some people, breakfast is their favorite meal of the day and they love breakfast. Why would you take that experience away from people? There's other experts who say you shouldn't be eating after 4 o'clock in the afternoon. Well, for some people, you'll be taking away their entire life experience, because food for them is what they do with their family, their friends, their social group, and they do that well and truly after 4 o'clock in the afternoon, and it's a beautiful part of their life. Why would you want to take that away? And it seems that we try and take stuff away from people because it's a solution. They've become overweight or out of shape, or they need to get back into shape. So we say, can't have, mustn't have, don't have, shouldn't have, and this is how you've got to exercise. And is it possible that one of the reasons why the world has gotten fatter and sicker and weaker than it's ever been is that we've made food and exercise very complicated? We used to live in a world where there was very little obesity. There was cardiovascular disease or coronary heart disease has always been the world's biggest killer, but there wasn't that many people who had it because there weren't very many overweight people. We were active. We exercised more. We played sport more. We had physical activity in school. We didn't sit down very much. We just moved more. So that's my second part. As an exercise professional, I specialize in exercise. What about you? And if I get people fit and if I get people strong, is it possible that then they will have a body that will burn up all the stuff that they put into it? And I'm going to use that as an example. The top athletes in the world, the ones that what they do for a living is exercise. So 3, 4, 5 hours a day, they're moving, they're exercising, they're lifting, they're throwing, they're jumping, they're kicking. Those people can't get enough food. If you ask them how many calories you eat, for example, we're getting into the thousands, if not tens of thousands. There are some big bodybuilders, there are some, I just love to think about it. They're eating 5,000 to 10,000 calories every day. And of course, you can't eat 10,000 calories of broccoli, it'd take you a week. So they have to eat lollies and chocolate and biscuits and cake and takeaway food and drink soft drink because they can't get enough calories because of the consumption or the energy consumption of their body. Their body has become such a fast food-burning, fat-burning, calorie-burning machine that they pretty much eat whatever they bloody well want. Now, of course, they eat for performance. So there's high-performance nutrition going in, but they can then supplement with whatever they bloody well want. I'll say it again. Have you met people that can eat whatever they want and they just burn it up? Well, wouldn't that be a great question to ask? How can I turn somebody's body into a fat-burning machine so that they can eat whatever they want and eat for performance and eat for pleasure? And, of course, that comes from having a really fit body, because fit bodies burn everything faster. But in particular, a fit body burns fat faster. We become fat burning machines because our respiratory quotient really wants to turn into a fat burning machine, because we can store a lot of fat. But the half a kilo of carbohydrate that we can store, we need that for sprinting and we need it for lifting. So the human body then wants to conserve that half a kilo of carbohydrate and turn the body into a fat burning machine. And it does. Isn't that exciting? So our respiratory quotient, which is where are the calories coming from that I'm burning at the moment, the body literally switches to a fat burning machine when we get fit and when we get strong. We also increase our metabolism when we have more muscle, or if we replace the muscle that we've lost. We burn more calories at rest because we've got a respiratory quotient that prefers to burn fat. We burn a stack more energy, or energy calories, food when we're exercising because we've got a faster metabolism. So all around, we turn our body into a high-performance fuel-burning machine. And as I always share, even if you've got a four-cylinder engine, you can turn that thing into a 6, 8, 12 cylinder, fat-burning, food-burning machine. And if you're a bloke, you can even turn it into a jet engine, because obviously men can put on muscle size and that turns their metabolism up, their speed of calorie burning up, their body's ability to burn everything up. One of the reasons why I can never understand why women don't want to get strong muscles and bones. Our muscles are the engine in our body, and the more muscle we have, or the more muscle we can conserve, don't lose as we get older, the faster we can keep our metabolism. There's a lot of women that share with me, of course, I'm going to get fatter as I get older because my metabolism slows down as I get older. Yeah, only if you bloody let it. Isn't that exciting? You don't have to get a slow metabolism if you maintain your muscle and you maintain your bone strength so that you can lift heavy things, so that you can sprint faster. You have a fast RQ, respiratory quotient, so fast fat burning. You have a fast metabolism, MR, metabolic rate, and you also have a much faster BMR, base metabolic rate. So you can actually increase the number of calories that your body needs over the course of a day because you've got a fit, strong, healthy body. Last but not least, of course, when you've got strong bones, you've got a strong immune system, which means you are less likely to get sick, if ever. And often we are restricted physically. We have to stop our exercise program or stop our fitness program because we've gotten sick or we've gotten injured. Well, obviously a fit, strong body is less likely to get injured. It's less likely to get sick. And if you pick up a germ bug or virus, you'll get rid of it much quicker, or it won't affect you at all, which means your productivity days, your body's ability to exercise hard with high intensity increases because you don't get sick. So a strong immune system comes from obviously being fit and strong. And then what about sleep? A lot of people talk about being tired and not getting enough sleep. Obviously, when you're really fit and really strong, you go to bed tired because you've puffed during the day, or you lifted heavy, or both. And because you've pumped happy drugs into your brain, you tend to sleep more effectively and sleep deeply because you have less stress. You've burnt up the stress in your body. You've burnt up the cortisol, the stress drugs, because you've sprinted fast, you've lifted heavy, you've got a body that loves to move and then loves to sleep deep. So it's a beautiful package. As an exercise professional, is it time for us to say, I'm going to stop telling people what they can and can't do, and I'm going to ask them, what do you want to do? What's important to you? What do you love to eat? What don't you like to eat? What can we do for you to turn your body into a fat-burning, food-burning machine so that you can love your food, you can love your exercise, and you can love your life? I don't want to be the person that tells people what they can't do. I want to add things into people's lives. And wouldn't it be nice to be the person that rings your client and says, have you had a chocolate today? Or have you had an ice cream today? Or have you been to the pub and had a beer today? Rather than, can't have that, it's bad for you. Would it be nice to be the deliverer of great news? Congratulations, you're in great shape. You've got a healthy resting heart rate, your blood pressure's healthy, your blood sugar levels are normal, your cholesterol levels are normal, you've got a stack of energy, you're performing at your best, you look good in and out of your clothes, and you're getting the results that you want from your eating and exercise plan. For me as an exercise professional, that sounds like heaven. How can we make it happen?